Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. This episode of the Let's Get Busy podcast is sponsored by KidLitCon, an annual conference celebrating and connecting the people who work in KidLit. From bloggers and podcasters to writers and librarians, anyone with a passion for KidLit and an excitement to talk about it will find good company here. I'm attending this year's KidLitCon, which will be held Friday, October 9th and Saturday, October 10th at the Hyatt Place Harbor East in Baltimore, and I invite you to join me. Early bird registration has been extended until September 20th, but be sure to register soon, as spots are filling up fast. Visit kidlitosphere.org/kidlitcon for more details. That's kidlitosphere.org/kidlitcon. See you there! Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner, an elementary school librarian, author of the Busy Librarian blog, and your host. Hey, I wanted to let you know about a new podcast I started entirely devoted to book reviews. It's called The Best Book Ever This Week, and you can find it on all your favorite podcast host sites, including iTunes and Stitcher. Subscribe today and never miss an episode. Speaking of which, this is episode number 183 of the Let's Get Busy podcast with Eric White, illustrator of Everyone Loves Bacon, his newest from Farrar Straus Giro, which is written by Kelly DiPuccio. I love Eric's Frankie Pickle series, and my students are absolutely obsessed with it. But you know what? Everyone Loves Bacon is my current obsession. Every single detail in this book feels perfectly edited, and the result is a picture book treat that I'm willing to bet will be hugely popular both in school libraries and on Father's Day and everywhere else where bacon is infused. You're gonna love it. Here is episode number 183 of the podcast with Eric White. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Eric White. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you, Matthew?
I'm doing wonderful. I've been looking forward to talking to you for a long time, Eric. It's been a long time.
It has. I was trying to remember when we connected. It has to be several months at least.
It has to, because it was whenever Kelly came on, when Kelly DiPuccio came on to talk about, I think at that point she was talking about Gaston, and I think Gaston was brand new. And she just threw out that her next book was about bacon, and that she had been on like Think Geek or something and found all this bacon merchandise, and that you were one of the people that she was working with on a book, the bacon one in particular, and that Greg Pozzoli was the other one.
Yep.
And from there, I mean, once you name drop on this podcast, it's all over. Then it's just exciting. There's nothing I think I enjoy more than seeing the really cool ways all of you are connected, because you've illustrated this book cover for this person, or done this with this other person, and went to school with here. And it's just really cool to see how tightly knit and connected everyone is.
It is. It's a really small community. And what's interesting is I met Kelly and Greg and Brian Biggs and Adam Rex all through – we all have the same agent.
Oh, I didn't put that together. Who's your agent?
Steve Wall.
Oh, Steve. Yeah, of course. I don't think I realized that Kelly was, maybe at that point, I wasn't aware that Steve represents half of the people I've talked to.
You have to rename it to the Let's Get Busy with Steve Malk podcast.
Steve Malk is my co-pilot.
Brian Biggs and I refer us as like Malkians because when we meet, we immediately become fast friends. And it's happened every single time, whether it be Heather Ross or Bob Shea, and yeah, now I'm just named up like crazy, but it's incredible how similar we are in personality and yet how different we all are from Steve. Because we're all just kind of goofy and quirky and Steve is very quiet and very, you know, so it's just, but he definitely has a type.
That's cool to know that you've all, I don't know. It's neat to know that you do have that through line. And I think I'm seeing the same thing with the people that I find out are represented by him. There is sort of that quality to all of you, but it's wonderful. And it's wonderful to know that he's behind all of you. It's wonderful just to know that there are books coming out by you guys, but, Steve, all the Malkians, I know this now. How about it? That's so funny. When did you get connected with him? When did you decide to seek out representation from an agent?
This was back in 2007.
Was it prior to, it would have been prior to Frankie Pickle coming out then?
Prior to Frankie. I was in the middle of working on my first graphic novel, My Dead Girlfriend.
Yeah.
And that all came about because I was working on a TV show called The OC, which was a teen dramedy on Fox. And one of the characters was a comic book artist. And I created all the props for that character. And Tokyo Pop saw my work and offered me a book deal to create an actual graphic novel. And so I jumped at the chance probably faster than I should have. I did it before I found an agent. And about midway through that process, I just realized I've been working in animation and film and TV for about 10 years at that point. I just realized, wow, I really love making books. I'd never done this before, and maybe I should kind of make a go at this. And so I started looking at the authors that I really liked and the illustrators. And so it was John Cheska and Adam Rex and Brian Biggs. And I realized they all had the same agent. So, and this is like one of those how I got an agent stories that make people, you know, want to jump out a window. But so I found his email on a lazy Sunday afternoon, and I emailed him and I said, "Hey, I'm this guy. I've done this, and here's some of my samples." And 6 hours later, he emailed me back and he's like, "Sorry it took so long. I was away for the weekend. But yeah, I would love to represent you." And
Eric, that's amazing. And what a testament to your work. But 6 hours, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's and I, you know, it's at the time, it's not that I didn't appreciate it, but now having met so many other creators and how they've gone through, you know, I guess I paid my dues in a different way. Because, I mean, I had spent, you know, 10 years of hard knocks in animation, and I had a portfolio that was, you know, and I had credits that were established, and I was getting a lot of attention because of the OC, but I had never done kids books before and didn't really have any kids book. I didn't have any manuscripts. I didn't have really much illustration wise that was kidlit specific. I just had a lot of ideas, and I had a lot that I had created for animation to try and sell as TV shows. And so I showed that to Steve, and that's what started our relationship.
Well, one of the things that it's just coming up in my brain because of having talked to him kind of recently, was that Steve talked about how he really likes getting his friends to make books. And by that, he was pointing to people that aren't in children's literature that are working, as you're saying, like you're doing in animation, or like Carson Ellis was mm-hmm. you know, doing the covers for December's albums and other beautiful art, and people like that. And seeing a quality in them that is storytelling in their art and urging them to consider writing for children. So that I like that in that way, your background spoke for you that way too. I feel like for the little that I know about Steve, but almost for the lot that I know about him, it seems like he's able to judge those sort of experiences really well for how they could, how they could translate into the future.
Yeah. I think he's really good at seeing the talent, but also seeing the passion for creating books for kids. Like, not that it's just like, hey, I want a job, I want a paycheck.
Yeah.
But people that really want to make a difference in kids lit. And that's, you know, when you look at his client list, I mean, there's just so many incredibly talented people that are always trying to break the mold. And you look at like what Mac Barnett does or what right. John does, you know, it's a lot of these guys and girls, they're just always trying to try something new and really not play it safe.
Nice. Well, that's good to know that there are people out there that, I mean, in that same way that there's a different agent for everybody and there's different people writing different things, but to be able to find a person that is emphasizing, if that's the type of person you are, that really wants to not play it safe and really wants to push what it means to write a children's book and what a children's book looks like and how it can encompass all these different emotions and all that. It's great that he's there for that. And then you come along recently now with this super snarky book with Kelly about bacon, which is, this is going to be like the book that will make grown fathers be back into reading picture books to their also grown children. Like, I'm picturing my dad wanting me to come over so that he can read, not to my 5-year-old son, but read this book to me as much as I'm already enjoying. I've had an ARC for something like a month or something now, and I've shared it with every blessed person I can put in front of it. No, it's great. It's a book. I don't know that, I don't remember Kelly talking about this or not. It's been too long, but it's a book that feels like, how has this not been written yet? And I
it's
like,
true.
I like when that happens. I'm really sort of tickled when that happens. Cause then I don't know, there's just this excitement every page turn that you just are feeling this excitement. Like, I know where this is going and it's wonderful. where it's sort of delivering what you, I don't know if it's what you hope will happen. Let me just back up. I'm going to back up, Eric, and give you a second, if you don't mind, just to share with the listening audience the story of Everyone Loves Bacon. Can we hear your elevator pitch for this story?
Sure. You know, it's a story about a piece of meat who...
Sold.
who thinks very highly of himself, and he realizes that he I'm trying to find just the right words without giving any, and I don't like spoiling anything.
No,
but
I mean, I think you can go to the extent that you could say his fame becomes enough that he realizes he doesn't need his friends anymore.
Yeah, definitely. His ego gets in the way quite a bit. But you know, he gets very grounded.
there are lines in this, if you don't mind, I'm going to read a spread to you, if you don't mind, just to give people sort of that's wordplay, to give people a flavor of what I'm talking about.
Nice.
Sorry, I did not intend that. It talks about early on, we start off, I'll just read the first three spreads. Everyone loves bacon, including bacon. Egg loves bacon. Waffle loved bacon. Pancake loved bacon. And we see Waffle saying, he loves me. He loves me not. And then it says, French Toast didn't love bacon. But he didn't count because French Toast doesn't like anyone. Smarmy French Toast, like, twisting up his mustache. He's looking at the...
I remember when I first read Kelly's manuscript and I got the second spread or third spread.
Yeah.
And I got there and I was like, okay, I'm going to do whatever I can to get this book because I want to draw that French toast and with the beret and, and neckerchief. And, yeah, that was, that had me sold for sure.
Can I ask you something? You actually bring up something that makes my brain curious. You said you're going to do everything you can to be able to illustrate this manuscript. It must be that I know you have to say yes to it, but when a publisher comes to you and says, we think we want you to illustrate this book, is it always that they're just waiting for you to say yes? Or is it always that they want you to submit samples to see if your vision of what it could look like is what they have in mind? Or maybe there's just no always, maybe I'm assuming the wrong thing.
Yeah, pretty much always, there are samples involved, and it sometimes it would surprise me early on. It surprised me where like, oh, we love your work. We're so excited to work with you. Could you do like 3 drawings for us so that we can kind of see what you might
okay.
do? Yeah, I was like, oh, okay. And
that
then
does
you find
happen,
out, yeah, and then you find out that really you're one of maybe 3 or a half dozen other illustrators that they were just as excited about.
Yeah.
And you're auditioning and you don't even realize you're doing it. Now I go into it just assuming, you know, that I'm auditioning if I know that there's, you know, if I know that it's not like they're making an offer right out of the gate and they want to see if I could do a sample, then chances are I'm not the only one they're asking.
Oh, because sometimes they would come to you and say, we'd like you to illustrate this book. And here's potentially, basically, like, I guess from my understanding, here's a contract. Do you want to illustrate this book?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. And the way this one came about was really unique too, in that Kelly and I became friends on Facebook through, I'm not sure, through Greg or through Brian, or maybe others through Bob Shea, or somehow we got connected, but we didn't really know each other. And I had posted one of the pages from my comic from Comic Squad, the Jiminy Sprinkles Cupcake. And there's Jiminy Sprinkles, and they're like these vegetables, the gangrene gang,
right?
The mean vegetables. And she saw it, and she messaged me on Facebook, and said, you know, I have this book about bacon. I love the way you drew this food. Would you be interested in, you know, giving it a try? You know, just seeing if like you could do a sample and see if my editor Gina O'Malley likes it. And I was like, yeah, sure. I'd love to take a crack at it. And, you know, she sent me the manuscript and I read it and I thought it was hysterical. And then I did the samples, and then lo and behold, I did get picked. And Steve even told me ahead of time that there was a lot of competition for this. This was one that, you know, several illustrators had read the manuscript, were really excited, you know, wanted to be a part of this. And I was lucky enough to be the one that was chosen. It was funny. And I won't name names, but afterwards, you know, jokingly, like, oh man, that was you that got that? Like, I tried for that too.
Oh, that must happen. You're right. Shoot.
Yeah, so it ended up working out great. But it's so unique for that to happen, because typically the author does not get to choose their illustrator.
Right.
A publisher likes to marry those two together themselves. And so this was a really cool opportunity that happened.
Yeah, it's only really, I mean, from my experience, it's only really every so often that I hear even that the author is even asked, like, who do you have in mind in the vein of what sort of illustration are you picturing when you're picturing your manuscript? Oh, I'm picturing it to be something like what Eric White does, or something like what Christian Robinson does. But I think that more gets at style, not I'm getting to pick who's going to illustrate my book. I'm positive it doesn't work that way. But that's, well, regardless of however it works, it worked for this book. And I am so glad that you illustrated this, because this book, Eric, this book is the greatest.
Oh, thank you.
Every single spread. Hilarious. And that's also a testament to Kelly. I don't want to leave her out. This story is hilarious, and it's told just the right way that I think in the beginning, as an adult, I'm also reading going like, yeah, bacon is trending in a way that, you know, once we hit bacon mayonnaise or bacon ice cream, I knew like, okay, then we've got to be done. Time to move on. But in this book, it's playing up to that we all love bacon and everyone loves him because he tells funny jokes and because all the girls like him and this and that. And he smells so good, that to have someone's head get inflated that way, I feel like the ending is only, it's only natural what could happen, how this could end. There's only one way for this to end. And it is a delicious ending, but every spread that you're doing along the way, you add Bacon gets a mustache. Bacon has, you know, friends that are frustrated with him. But I think I even mentioned you on Twitter or Facebook or something that one of my other favorite parts was that there's bacon end papers. This is fantastic. They should have, when they're sending out the arcs and they're doing sort of like the giveaway things that they do when you go to conferences, that there needed to be like bacon air fresheners that go along with this or something to hang on your car.
It's so funny that you mentioned that, because Kelly and I actually looked into making scratch and sniff bookmarks.
Right.
and it was going to be like thousands of dollars.
No.
It was so astronomical because you have to buy the scent, which then gets added to the ink, and you have to buy like an entire bulk quantity of the scent. So just to start, it was like $800 for one thing of the scent, and you needed more than one for a particular print run. And we were so sad because, you know, it would have been awesome. But, you know, we do have some bookmarks that we made that we're going to be giving out once the book comes out. But they will just smell like paper, unfortunately.
But from the school visit side, and I've joked, I can't even remember who I've said this to, one or two other people. But I feel this is sort of the perfect book to write with school visits in mind, because you're going to get bacon when you go to school visits,
right?
That's fantastic.
Yeah. With my other suit, with Frankie Pickle, I would get pickles everywhere I went.
And you would really?
I would. Yeah. And I do like pickles. But there was one, and I think it was somewhere in Ohio. It was like this candied pickle, and it was like blue, and It was the most wrong pickle I've ever tried in my life. And I've had every, and as you can imagine, I've had like pickles made with Kool-Aid. I've had fried pickles. But for some reason, this candy pickle was just, it was almost like the maraschino cherry of pickles.
The
consistency of it but it was blue.
Blue.
But yeah, I'm excited. I do a lot of school visits. I love to visit elementary schools, and secretly I'm hoping to be able to bring home the bacon.
I saw, you know, thinking of to bring home the bacon. Sweet. High five on that one. That was good. I was watching on, it's fun when publishers post or make videos, and in your case, Simon and Schuster did this with Frankie Pickle, but they, to make videos that show that we can share in schools and kids can watch, like, and they have you drawing Frankie. And on that video, you say something like, it's been a while since I remember, but you said something like, I've drawn him so many times that I know sort of where to leave the holes. So you don't just start with a circle and sort of leave holes for the hair and all that. Have you drawn, I mean, because of school visits and then doing what, 3-4 books? There's a fourth one on the way, right?
The Frankie books?
Of the Frankie books?
Yeah.
Am I wrong with that?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. I know there's a fourth one on the way. Here's the funny thing, because earlier in the week when I knew I had my interview coming up with you, I was looking on IndieBound and it says, you need to check this out. Okay, I am 99% sure that on IndieBound right now, it says that your new Frankie Pickle book, which I wrote down was Land of Lost Recess, mm-hmm. right? Frankie Pickle and the Land of Lost Recess, says it's coming out in 2030. I was like, that is a plenty of time for Eric to finish. Anyway, though, I assume, though, from doing 4 Frankie Pickle books and whatever drafts you run through, plus doing all of these school visits, that you must have drawn him in any number of positions thousands of times, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
That's sort of an animator thing, though, right? That's a muscle that you've already strengthened from being an animator.
Yeah, I often say that being able to draw is very similar to learning a new language and understanding, instead of putting letters together, you're just putting different shapes together. And so when I would draw him, I sort of follow the same pattern every time as I'm signing my name, and you know, I'm drawing the circle for his head and the spiky hair and the ears and whatever. And so I kind of know what's going to come next. And that definitely is, you know, comes from my training working with, you know, Disney and Cartoon Network and Warner Brothers, that you have to create so many drawings that have to look the same. They have to be on model, that you need a shorthand and you need to be able to repeat that over and over again.
Right. And to have, I perpetually am thinking of the students and you visiting my school, that sort of experience of what they, maybe not even beyond that, the day after you visit the school, when I see the kids again and they are still talking about things, and kids always ask questions about the author and the school visit after you've left. And it makes me think about those kids and being able to hear from you about having to draw all those characters so many times so that you know them. And in that way, that it's great to be doodling even the same character over and over. I guess I've just heard from some children commenting on other class artists that, oh, why do you always draw that one thing? Or why do you always draw Superman? Or why do you always whatever? But exactly what you're saying is that that's what you have to do. You have to be able to do it so often that you don't have to think about it anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was a kid, my mom is now retired. She was an art teacher. And what's interesting is she, you know, I could draw cartoon characters whenever I wanted to, but she wanted me to really focus on drawing realistically and learning perspective and learning anatomy and all those things. Her attitude was that, you know, if I could learn the important stuff, I could then draw anything. And I remember as a kid being really frustrated. It's like, all I want to draw is, you know, Calvin or, you know, Garfield or something, you know, it's like, no, go draw this plant. and then all of a sudden, as I got older and I found myself, especially like making kids with, you don't know what you're going to be drawing next. And, you know, even in Bacon, there are so many scenes where, sure, I'm drawing bacon, but I'm drawing other food characters. I'm drawing appliances that are in the background. It's amazing the more mundane things that I've had to draw over the course of my career that you never, you know, wouldn't think you'd wake up one day and you're drawing a jukebox or you're drawing, you know, a coffee mug or whatever. But that stuff's just as important. And I found that having that foundation really helped tremendously. And that's kind of the advice I give whenever I'm meeting young artists and, you know, to really work on those fundamentals, because even though they're not fun, they will just make you stronger so that when you are trying to draw things that are out of your comfort zone or you have to draw things over and over again, you have that sort of memory muscle of being able to repeat that.
Yeah, that is something too, I think, that at, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 years old is something you need to hear from people like you, people that they are looking up to, so that they realize that they have this reference point that some of the people you've talked to, the boys and girls you've talked to, I'm sure there are words like that you've said about working on those fundamentals over and over that has stuck with them and will be something that they'll talk about forever. That even if it's not drawing, if it was, I don't know, playing the violin, or if it was training a dog to do some trick. I have no idea where I'm going with this, but that's something to,
you know, that's value. The thing about being an artist that always, I never was able to understand, was that, you know, if you want to be great at a sport, you have to practice all the time. If you want to be able to play a great instrument, you have to practice all the time. And yet if you want to be an artist, you have to be born with a gift. And it seems so, short-sighted, because when you look at my drawings from when I was a kid, there was an interest, but it wasn't like I was drawing the same now that I was when I was 6 or 7. I just drew all the time. That was my everything. And it was by creating those, you know, probably millions of drawings at this point that got me to where I am now. But that doesn't mean that, you know, when I was that age that I should have stopped because I wasn't as good as an adult, yeah. You know? And so whenever I visit schools and talk to the kids, like, I really try and show them that, you know, forget about it being awesome, forget about it being better than the kid next to you, just have fun, you know, and try and if you're drawing a stick figure but you're telling a story and you're having fun doing it, that's great, you right. know. And if you want to keep doing that, then eventually you're going to get better and better. It's not something that only the kids that are born with, you know, the gift. And I think it's more they're born with the passion for that, and that's where they're putting their focus, than, you know, the only certain kids can be artists.
I think you hit right at it, that it's not that notion of being born gifted for whatever skill. There is a thing that you can be predisposed to perhaps looking at that sport or that skill or that that certain way you approach whatever in life in a different way. But that's not to say, like you're saying, that it's not to say that you can't play soccer or that you can't be a chef or that you can't be an artist. You might not be able to see things from a different perspective the way someone else would, or maybe it's your unique upbringing that will give you the unique perspective from someone else. No one can really know, right? Like, we have this weird thing as adults that we look back and we can say, oh yeah, I can see all of the things that have sort of led me to being a teacher or led me to being whatever, a mechanic or whatever. But really, when we were 6 or 7, do we really know that that's what we were going to be? I can't imagine. I think that it's just more, you get interested in it and then you get good at it because you care about it. Hopefully, I think the reason why you're good at being telling stories visually through art is because you care about being good about telling stories through art.
Right. Absolutely.
Good. I was worried that that was the point where you spoiled that I actually don't care. Well, I'm glad, Eric, that you are making art, and I'm glad that your name comes up so much in my library. Frankie Pickle, I know that you see thousands of kids each year that are obsessed with Frankie Pickle, but they're obsessed because it's so good.
Thank you.
And also, Comic Squad, come on. To have all of you come together for that, that was insane.
Yeah, that was like a meeting of the super friends. That was so much fun, and it was something that we had talked about for years. I think it took over 2 years for that to finally come together. Because we would, you know, we're really good friends and we would see each other at different events and, oh, wouldn't it be great if we did something together? And then, you know, and then Jarrett and Jenny and Matt,
Jenny
went,
and Matt, yeah,
made it happen. And it's, I think the other thing I think is really cool is that they're, I don't know if you've seen the second volume.
I haven't seen any glimpses at all of it yet.
There's like a cover that you might be able to see that has a list of some of the, and that they're kind of passing the, like they're trying to expand that audience and show you even, you know, more kid comic makers, and you know that it's there's just so many of us out there that want to create comics for kids, and it'll be a really nice showcase of so many different styles and stories.
I agree. I think in a couple of years time, when there's 2, 3, 4 volumes, it really, I mean, what it's already doing now, that single volume where everything, every story has that through line of Recess, I think that is such a great way. I mean, much like the way that Kazoo's the boxes, the mystery boxes, the mystery islands. He's got the same thing sort of going where there's this through line in these short stories told through comics that he brings an anthology of.
You mean through Flight? Is that what you're...
No, he's got the three, he has three out now beyond Flight. Flight was that too, but Kazoo has, it's the mystery boxes and then Mystery Islands. There are three out.
Okay.
But they're great for that exact same the exact same thing that is going on. That to have I'm looking it up while I'm doing that annoying thing that I'm typing while I'm talking. Explore the Mystery Boxes. There it is. Explore the it's the through line is the word explorer. Explore the Hidden Doors.
Oh, okay.
Explore the Lost Islands. Explore the Mystery Boxes. I was just getting stuck on the word mystery. I apologize for that. But no, to have someone drawn in by a name or two names or whatever. In your case, with Comic Squad Recess, you've got, whether or not they know your names, often I think kids don't know those names as well as the adults do, perhaps, or the librarians do. But they see Baby Mouse on the cover, or they see Lunch Lady on the cover, and they're drawn in. And then suddenly they're getting, you know, 8 different artists, 8 different stories, or whatever the number was. And getting exposed to those people. And then as it should be served in the back of the book to hear that, oh, this is the person that does these other books, being able to make those connections and to connect with comics that way, I think is super important. So I'm glad that you contributed to that and that you continue to contribute such great art to our readers and to us big grown-up readers too, because I love it.
Oh, thank you.
All right, I'm gonna wrap things up with Kickball, and I was flattered that you told me ahead of time that you've been thinking about this.
I have.
Blows my mind sometimes to think that people think about this at all, but I love it. So I'm going to have edited.
I love Kickball. For
good.
Sure.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear that. I knew that we were of the same ilk. Maybe that's part of you Malkians, is that maybe the through line that you didn't realize is that maybe secretly you all love Kickball. And that makes me an honorary Malkian when we get onto the field, which will be fun. It'll be a ridiculous team, but regardless, I can't wait to hear who you're going to have on the field. So I'm assembling an all-star Kidlit Dream Team Kickball Tournament. And Eric, I would love to know what one person alive or past from the Kidlit world you would want on your team and why.
So my answer is a little unorthodox. It's not exactly a Kidlit person, but I would want to include Hank Ketchum, who the creator of Dennis the Menace.
Excellent. Hank Ketchum, yeah.
It's interesting that we were just talking about comics for kids, because I learned to read because of the Sunday comics, and I was reading Dennis the Menace and Heathcliff and Peanuts. And as I got older, really fell in love with Hank Ketchum's drawing style. And part of the reason why I thought to include him, there's so many people to choose from, is just thinking about how funny he was and all of the trouble that Dennis would get into, that he would probably be a pretty colorful player to have on your team, and there would probably be some interesting hijinks.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad that you brought it back to Hank, because that is not a name I've heard on here before. But Dennis the Menace, come on, that's great. I love to think that his work, his body of work, was something that has been on your mind and influencing you through what you've done too. Because that's just great to know that influence comes from there. Ah, Eric, it's been a pleasure. I wish you many a bacon-scented, amazing school visit this year, and all the good stuff I know you have working on in the background that's going to be coming out. Thanks again for putting some time aside to come on and talk to me.
Oh, thank you, Matthew. It was my pleasure. It's a lot of fun.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by Matthew Winner in his library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. Theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, there are a ton of great episodes of Let's Get Busy archived and waiting for you at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com. And if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on the blog or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's Koko Sleep, and I'll see you there.